Well, it's such a pleasure to be here with y'all today. So refreshing. Several times we've gotten notes from some of y'all, emails, just saying we're praying for you. And you don't know how much that means on the field when we're there. We have the national pastor and a few people at the church. They're believers. But then other than that, there's not a whole lot of fellowship that we get. So being here with y'all is just a real blessing for us. And we're soaking up the fellowship with all the believers. And we really appreciate when we get those notes saying we're praying for you, that God answers prayers. And if you don't leave with anything else today, I'd just like you to leave with that. Our God is powerful, and He answers prayers. There's been so many times God has just directly answered prayer. And it may have been after several years of waiting, but God answers prayer. And it's been neat how the Lord has given us opportunity to teach our children how powerful our God is through different experiences that He's brought along the way. Before I share some of those just different experiences and different things God has taught us, we're going to show about a 10-minute video, just kind of gives an overview of the ministry, and then I'll share some more things and open up for some questions. And if we can have the video.
Howdy, we are the Larkins, and I'd like to share with you today is how the Lord has uniquely prepared us, called us for ministry, and is using us to reach the Gauchos for His glory in Uruguay, South America. Uruguay is a small country south of Brazil with about 3.5 million people. Half of them live in the capital city of Montevideo, and the other live scattered in some smaller cities in the country and in the rural areas. The people there, like many people in the world, are living and dying without Christ. The Lord has burdened us to go there and reach the rural communities, especially for His glory. God prepared us especially for this task. Unbeknownst to me, I grew up on a cattle ranch in West Texas. Back on the backside of the cattle ranch, never thinking that God would call me to reach the lost Gauchos in Uruguay for His glory. Tanya grew up as a missionary child in Uruguay. Spent most of her life in Montevideo, capital city. And she knew nothing about ranching until she met me. In 2006, God allowed us to take a missions trip to Uruguay, South America. While we were there, we spent several weeks with our parents in capital city, several more weeks with some missionaries, Tim and Carrie Willoughby in Minas, and about 10 days with a national pastor, Pastor Eduardo, in Mayo. It was during our time in Mayo that God burdened our hearts to return and preach the gospel to the Gauchos. While we were there, I spoke to Pastor Eduardo and asked him just how it would come across if we were able to come down, be able to purchase a place somehow by God's provision in the middle of the ranching community, work and live among them, and preach the gospel, how it would come across to the Uruguayan culture. Well, Pastor Eduardo was extremely excited, and he said, well, that would gain their confidence and their trust much faster if they realized that you came from the same kind of background as they are in. You live the same life with them, with the same struggles day in and day out. But they were able to see your hope, your hope and trust in God. And through this, you believe would impact lives and many would come to be saved. With this exciting goal in mind, we left for Uruguay in 2011. And after a year and a half in Uruguay, God amazingly provided 75 acres, which now is Faith Ranch. After God provided Faith Ranch for us, He had a trial for us. We moved there and there was no running water or electricity. We had moved a 40-foot sea container to live in, put some windows and doors in it, and Tanya and myself, along with four of our children, lived there for 6 months. That may not seem too bad, but when you have to haul water from the creek to wash the dishes, to wash the clothes, to bathe, actually went, for the first few months, we actually went to the creek and bathed in fresh, very fresh spring water. We had no electricity except for a small generator that we'd use a couple hours a day, and one of our neighbors would bring us bottles of ice to put in our freezer compartment so we could keep the meat and milk from spoiling too fast. After living there for a couple of months, the Lord amazingly provided so we could pay for a well driller to come drill a well, and that greatly improved our living situation. Having running water in the house, we installed a bathroom with all the amenities, a sink, a toilet, shower, which we've greatly enjoyed. Then about 6 months later, a friend called me from one of our supporting churches and asked if they could come down and help build a house. He's a builder, and he came with a group of men from their church, and in 19 days constructed a house up on the hill. It's about 1,600 square feet, and we moved into that, which was an incredible blessing. Well, once again, I asked God to grow our faith, and what did he do? He sent us some more trials. You ever heard of living like the good old days? I don't know how good they were, but we sure had a lot of work. That's one thing for sure. I was able to make some fence posts and boards using a chainsaw after cutting down an old tree. Then we were getting hungry and planted a garden. I was able to borrow one of the plows from our neighbor, and then he came over and we plowed the garden for the first time using a horse and a plow. It was a lot of hard work, but very enjoyable, the outcome, as we had a great garden to eat from afterwards. As many of you are wondering, well, how does this all work out, and how is the Lord using this as far as reaching souls for him in Uruguay? Well, unbeknownst to us, through all the hard work and sweat and time we spent almost just living the first few months, especially in the container, God was working in the lives of our neighbors as well, many of whom were looking on and talking about us behind our back, of course, but many of whom had later expressed, "Boy, we remember doing that. We've done that for years. I can't believe rich Americans coming down here and living the same way we do." And they began to ask why. Soon we became known in the area as the people that always talked about God. We'd meet somebody new and they'd say, "Oh yeah, you're the new people that always talk about God." Well, that's the thing that's most important to us, so that's what we're going to talk about. I'm able to witness to the neighbors almost on a daily basis, one neighbor or the other. Our one neighbor up on the hill has helped us multiple times, building fence, putting the roof on the house, helping plow the garden. We've witnessed and witnessed to him, and he's still not ready to accept Christ as his Savior. One of the main things we struggle against in Uruguay is a religion that is Pentecostalism mixed with anime. It comes down from Brazil. So there's a lot of witchcraft mixed with it. The pastors of these churches go out even into the rural areas and tell them that their sheep are sick or their cattle are dying because they're demonized, and that if they pay them so much money, they'll cast out the demons from their livestock. Of course, if the livestock doesn't recover, it's not the pastor's fault, it's the rancher's fault that he didn't have enough faith. Along with our ministry among the rural community where we are living, we are helping Pastor Eduardo in the town of Mayo, which is about an hour drive away. He's working in a small church plant and has been there for almost 16 years. He's a national and is a very faithful servant of the Lord. We help him with the ministries there in the church, along with the main services Sunday morning and Thursday evening prayer meeting. I've been switching on and off, alternating with Pastor Eduardo preaching. He'll preach a Sunday morning and a Thursday evening, and I will preach the following. God's been working in the hearts of people there and growing those faithful few that we have at the church. We also have a children's and youth ministry. Many of the children have come and gone. They've grown up learning about the Bible, and now they're in the world, which makes it very sad. Our youth ministry has fluctuated from 1 to 30 and back down to nothing again. As the youth come, learn about Christ, and then prefer the things of the world. Please pray for this ministry, as God is powerful and has promised His word will not return void.
We want to thank you for partnering with us in this ministry through your faithful prayers and support. I might have raised some questions. I don't know if anybody has any questions to start off with. Answer any questions. Yes, ma'am.
What is your greatest need?
One of the biggest prayer requests is not only spiritual growth, but that we'd be able to impact more people in the community, not only in the ranching community there, but also in the town of Melo. It's about 60,000 people there. So souls for him is our greatest desire. Financially, we're praying we'd be able to build another separate building or add on another room to the church itself. It's a rather small building. We have one room for services, and then it has a connected to another side room. But we'd like to have at least one more room to have, so we could have our children's class in one side and our youth group in the other. Right now we have them side by side and can be distracting, can be challenging. So,
how many people are in the church?
There's about a half a dozen faithful members. So, since we've been there, the pastor's had started this work 16 years ago. He separated from some churches that started turning and going Pentecostal, and he started the work in his living room. And then he outgrew his living room, so he moved to his garage. And then about 6 years ago, they were able to buy this piece of property with a house on it. So, and just amazing to see God working there. And there's been a lot of people since we've been there the last 5 years. There's been a lot of people come and go. Come for a while, learn, and then leave. And so that's always saddening when you have somebody come and you think they're really excited about learning about God and wanting to know Christ as their Savior, and then they never, the cost is too great, and they decide the world has more pleasurable things to offer. Yes, sir.
What is the potential that you see to bring in to the Lord?
Yes, the potentials are the people that we meet on a daily basis and people we have that would have Bible studies with us. They are incredible. We see the need is great. The laborers are few. We can't seem to, although it's a very hard community, Pastor Eduardo, to support his family, he reads water meters for the city. So he's working all week long. And through that, he has a lot of connections and be able to talk to a lot of people. And so he'll stop on the sidewalk. Somebody will stop him to ask him something, and he'll start witnessing to him. And for long, they'll say, well, you know, We'd be open to a Bible study in our home. And just over the last, over the last year, there's probably 10 of those opportunities we haven't been able to follow up on, just time-wise restrictions. So we're praying for more laborers, for co-workers. Yes, sir. Good question.
Two questions. You were talking about the struggles of learning Spanish, but do they have a lot, like, local languages there also?
No, it's mostly Spanish, and then along the border, there's Portuguese mix, so.
Okay. And as far as, like, your family's concerned, you guys run a ranch? I mean, you're running it, like.
Yes, sir.
Just like everybody else has.
Yes, sir.
So how much time does that take, and how are you able to, work in the,
Sure.
Time for ministry also.
Absolutely. Yep. Just amazingly, it was about a year and a half after we got there. We were looking at a place to rent or to lease because we didn't have any kind of funds to buy a place. We were looking at a place to lease out in the rural communities. And we found this one place, just gorgeous place right in the middle of rural communities. And it was up for lease, so it didn't have water or electricity on, running water electricity. It had a spring box about a couple hundred yards from an old rock house. And so we prayed, and we thought, well, we could make it. We'll make it work. And the morning we went to sign the lease contract, Then we walked into the realtor's office, and he says, well, you know, you have to understand, one of the owners just came in this morning. There's two owners. One of them just came in and said he wanted to put in the contract that if you're going to lease the place, then you need, it's going to be a lease to buy. If you don't put down a down payment within 6 months, then you have to pay a 10% penalty. And it was like, God closed the door. We were like, there is no way. We're not getting into this. And so the next day, God provided a house for us in town to rent. And we moved into that house in town. And then a month and a half later, I got a call from one of our supporters. And he said, well, hey, you know, how are things going? Have you found a place, you know, a small place out in the middle of a rural community that you'd be interested in buying? I said, well, we saw this one place, but, you know, then we tried to rent it, lease it, and it was, the Lord just clearly shut the door on renting it, because the guy wanted to sell it. Really, instead of renting it, he wanted to sell it. and he says, well, how much do they want for it? And I told him, and he says, okay, I'll wire you the money tomorrow. And trying to figure out what to say next, you know. Wow. Incredible how God just orchestrated everything, sent the money. We were able to buy the 75 acres there. We can rent about a cow for every 3 acres. And so about 25 head. And when we moved there, when we moved the container there, we didn't have, you know, running water, electricity to begin with. And it was something I never thought I would do. Never thought I would be living without electricity, without running water. And like I said in the video, it took us the first few months, just felt like we were spending all our time just living. I mean, by the time we hauled water from the creek to wash the clothes and hauled it for washing the dishes and taking care of the kids and trying to improve the living conditions, and I would feel frustrated. Sometimes I'd get up early in the morning, you know, 5 o'clock, to have quiet time with the Lord. And I remember just crying out, Lord, what am I doing here? Is this what you have for us? And then we started hearing feedback from the neighbors. We'd go to the local animal auctions. I like attending the animal auctions. It's kind of a social gathering for a lot of the ranchers. And go there, and our neighbor would introduce us to so-and-so. Oh, this is so-and-so. And hey, we heard about you. You talk about God all the time. And we can't believe you're living here like this. Why'd you come? Let me tell you. It's open opportunity. Let me tell you. Because they would say, why? I mean, all Americans are rich. They have multiple cars, multiple houses, a boat in their drive. And I mean, they got everything. It's money flowing out their ears. I mean, that's what they see on TV, so it must be true. And, you know, why are you here? And so they were watching us from a distance, and incredible the impact. I never knew it had an impact. I didn't ever want to live without electricity. I didn't ever want to have to. We always plowed the garden with a tractor or a tiller. We had a tiller. Never plowed. Thought I'd plow with a horse. but God used all those things, not only for witnessing, but also just showing the people that we're real people like them. But our hope is in a different spot. And, yes, ma'am.
Is there ever any danger, either from the government or from the people, for talking about God?
There hasn't been. It was, Uruguay wasn't founded on religion. Roman Catholicism is about 37% in name only. We run across a lot of people said, "Oh, I go to church. I'm okay." Find out they go to the Catholic Church about once a year for Mass or for Christmas program, and is very nominal Catholicism. Up until 2002, it was illegal to have a public display of a cross. And then in 2002, the Pope decided he was going to come visit, and so they built this huge. It's about a 6-story cross in one of the downtown plazas in Montevideo. And so I kind of annihilated that law. so religion, it wasn't founded on religion. And so it's amazing the impact it has on the society as a whole. But it's not, we can preach, we can go door to door. The only problem that we've seen as far as danger, as far as being careful, is a lot of times when they have a voting day, It's almost 100% of the time on Sunday. And so if we have a meeting at the church, it can be illegal to actually have a meeting at the church. Public meeting when everybody's out voting. So it can be seen as an uprising, I guess you might say, against a political party or whatever. It's a republic, but they had a, back in the early 70s, they had a communist military state, and so there's a lot, because a lot of the leaders from Russia, back after World War II, fled to Argentina and Uruguay and Paraguay, and so a lot of that influence, the communistic influence, is infiltrated the system, and so they're a lot more communistic than we are here in a lot of things. Just paperwork to do it's bureaucracy to the nth degree. You have to go across town just getting my paperwork to be able to stay in the country. Tanya, she's a citizen. She was born in Uruguay, and so are all the kids citizens through her, Uruguayan citizens. But I have to get paperwork to stay in the country, and I have to go across the town to this building to get a stamp, and then go over here to get a signature, and then over there to get another paper, and it's quite a nightmare. But their number one economy is tourism. They have a lot of white sand beaches along the coast, and so actually that's the number one economy that they have. And the second is their wool and meat in export, or wool and beef export. So there's a lot of sheep and a lot of beef. And so it's been amazing just with our neighbors, since we have cattle. And when we first got there, I'll tell you how God has changed us in some ways. Sometimes you say, I'll never have something. It's a dangerous thing to say. Well, I remember after I'd had sheep when I was 14, I said, I'm never going to have sheep again. The most stupidest animal. I hate dealing with them. I don't like shearing them. They're just... I'm never going to have sheep. And we get to Uruguay, and everybody has, even if they have cows, they have sheep. So we're going, I'm like, I'm not going to have sheep. I got cows, I got my horses, I'm not going to have sheep. And went to some of the animal auctions, and we were talking, you introduced to different people, and they're like, so, what kind of sheep you got? And I'm like, we don't have sheep. And they're like, what do you eat? I'm like, but living without electricity, there's no way to preserve a beef, especially for a family. There's no way to preserve a beef long enough to eat it all. And so the majority of them eat a lot of sheep for their meat. It's primarily lamb. And so when I said, we don't have sheep, it's like, what do you eat? We don't have refrigeration. What do you eat? A lot of people have it's a box about yay tall, about 18 inches wide, 18 inches deep, has a couple meat hooks in there. It's a screened in box, and hanging out under a tree, and that's where they store. They'll kill a sheep, cut it up, and hang it up in there until they eat it. So it's a totally different culture. Lot to learn. And so after that, they were asking about several different people. What do you eat? What in the world? You're not eating sheep. At that point, we didn't have any steers to butcher, upcoming steers, much less a place to put it, to preserve it. And so we had bought several sheep at the auction and butchered them, and then put some of the meat in the freezer in town. And then just as we would go to church, we had a freezer at church, and we'd pick up meat and take back. Then one day I was talking to my neighbor, this neighbor up the hill from us. His name is Amancio. If you remember to pray for him, he's... just an amazing neighbor. He's come over, helped me build a fence. We worked 7 days, starting at 7 in the morning, not finishing until 9 at night. And he was there the whole time, didn't want me to pay him for it. Helped me put the roof on our house, plow the garden, all kinds of stuff. Just an amazing neighbor, as neighbors go. But he hasn't accepted the Lord. So if you remember him in your prayers, that he would submit his life to God. Where was I going? Oh, he asked me one day, he says, in your property, you got a lot of weeds coming up. He said, if you brought some sheep, it'd really help. He was very gracious about telling me this, how I need to get sheep. And I'm still in the rebellion stage. I'm never going to have sheep. And so I said, well, I'll tell you what. This was last year we were in a drought, and everybody's property was hardly with any grass. And the sheep pellets were the only thing sticking up above. It's shorter than a golf course. And I said, well, you need some more grass. We'd had a lot of rain the year before, and hadn't been able to buy a lot of animals. We only had 8 head. And so I said, well, we got extra grass here. And why don't you put some sheep on our place? That'll help you with your grass problem, and they'll help me with my weed problem. He says, well, let me think about it. And a couple days later, he came back, and he says, I've been thinking about your proposal. He says, how about I put 26 head over there and on your place, and then in the spring, we'll split the lambs. I said, well, that works for me. He said, that way you can get a start on your sheep. Okay, Lord. If it's sheep I'm supposed to have, if that's going to impact the culture and allow me an entrance into somebody's life for you, then I'll have sheep. God changes us through life's experiences, and many times when we say, I'm not, and sometimes I think God's like, oh, really? But he answers prayer. And earlier I said, it's been amazing to teach our children through all these experiences. I mean, living in a container, it was rough on them going from town where we had lights, electricity, all the fluff of life, and going out and not having lights, not having running water. Teaching them to trust our guide. Teaching them that these things aren't the necessities that we have to have. Being available, being able to be used by God in whatever situation, and then to see how God has been using that just to open doors of communication between us and our neighbors. Because, if you go to a different culture, there's all these things. They look at us, the weird Martians that come in. This one neighbor, Amancio, his wife didn't want to come down and visit Tanya because she was afraid they wouldn't have anything to talk about. They wouldn't have anything in common. These weird, weird people. And so there's all these barriers that have to be broken down to start a relationship of trust where they start trusting you, seeing you as real people, and realize we're not, and especially with the Pentecostalism, the health, wealth, and prosperity gospel, we're not there to get your money, to steal your land, to steal your houses. We're preaching Christ, and we don't want anything for it. We just want to see you have the same hope that we have. And so that's just been amazing. And I remember one day, as far as God answering prayers, teaching our kids that, we were at church doing some work in front of the church, and just with a pick and a shovel, and had David with me. He's 6 years old now. At that point, he was about 4. And this really nice backhoe tractor owned by the county drove by in front of the church. And David says, wow, Papa, look at that tractor. It's like, that's a nice tractor, isn't it? It's like, well, you could get this done a lot faster if we had a tractor. Yes, it would be a lot easier. I was drenched in sweat. I said, well, we need to pray about it. So we prayed for a tractor, as we've done multiple times. And when we got done praying, he looks up at me and says, so what'd he say? What do I say? Well, for now, God said, wait. God answers prayer, and sometimes it's wait, and that's the most difficult thing we have to do sometimes when God says wait. It seems like something we want. This got to happen now, God. He says, no, just wait. My timing is perfect. So it's good to all these different experiences God has brought us through, has changed us, and allowed us teaching opportunities for our children. Yes. Yes. Well, the the year before last, then with the whole language learning, we felt that Katie was struggling just communicating with some of her friends at church and children's church and such. She was picking it up, but not as fast as we thought she could if she was just totally immersed in it day by day. So there's a one-room schoolhouse just about half a mile up the road from us. And so we put her and David up there. She was full-time. David was a couple days a week for that year. And there was 8 students. When they were there was 8 students there. And her language improved greatly. Both their languages, learning Spanish improved greatly. But then there was a lot of things that they struggled with and a lot of things that were taught at school with dancing and music and sex education that was not good. And at the end of the year, we said, we're not going to do this. We can't do this anymore. And so we pulled them out of school. And through that whole process, of course, as we've let y'all know in the prayer letters, the school teacher, we talked to her multiple times, and she said, it's against the law. You have to go to school. We went and talked to the regional inspector. And she said, well, we're a membership with the Homeschool Legal Defense, and they have contact there in Uruguay. And so we'd been back and forth with them. We had all these papers showing it wasn't unconstitutional to homeschool them there in Uruguay. And so we took that to the inspector and talked with her. Actually, the chief of police for our section went with us. He was kind of on our side, kind of helping us kind of for what we were doing. And went to talk to her, and she said, "Well, I'll send all this paperwork to Montevideo to the main office." She's like, "But I'm positive the answer that's going to come back is a negative. You're going to have to, as soon as I get the answer back, you have to send the kids to school the next day, or go to court." And that was in October, and so we said, "Okay," and we walked out of her office the chief of police said, I'll let you know if I hear anything. She said she'd let us know whatever the answer came back. And also the Homeschool Legal Defense said they would let us know if they heard anything. So we're still waiting. the school year ended in December, and then they started up again in the first of this month. So we haven't heard anything negative or positive. And We want to be, want to do what's right, and do what's right for our kids and their learning, and also be a testimony to our neighbors and the community, so we're praying that we would really like an answer, not that they would just kind of let it slide under the table and go on and on. We'd like to have an answer so we can either if it's affirmative to be able to help out other families that we know in Uruguay that are struggling in different churches, that there are some young families, and they're trying to figure out something to do because they can say, we as a believer, how can we participate? How can we send our kids to these different classes? Yes, sir.
When you're sharing the gospel, you find with the witchcraft and the animals, and you have to go back to foundational material from Genesis and the creator-creature distinction and who God is.
Absolutely, and a lot of redefining terms too. A term that might mean something to us will mean totally distinct or distorted to them. And
so, can you give an illustration of how you would converse with somebody trying to share the gospel?
Sure. Just asking them. I usually approach someone asking them about their view of God. If they first of all believe in God. And I would say probably 75% of the people I talk to say they believe there's a God. And then ask them why. And a lot of the people, more in the rural communities, say, it's like this. Look around. So that's exactly right. It's what Romans says. He has displayed himself in creation so that no one has an excuse. And then explain to them the need of knowing God personally. And they say, I know there's a God. I'm just living my life. Living for the moment, and then that's it. And so then we go in presenting the need for our personal need for a Savior, how we are sinners. And a lot of people are very skeptical just because of the Pentecostals that have come in preaching that, well, you accept Christ and you're going to be wealthy and you're going to all your problems are going to go away and you're going to prosper, and that's totally opposite. We get saved and our problems almost just beginning in one way, in this world sense, because we're going to face opposition, we're going to face ridicule, we're going to face persecution for what we believe, especially in a culture that is not based in Christianity, like much like our culture here in the U.S. was at a Christian foundation, and there it wasn't at all. So there's a lot more pressure when somebody says, "Hey, I think I'm going to look at going, you know, look at what the Bible says," then their friends, their family are all against it. So, was that, did that answer your question? Very possible. Capaz que sí. ¿Cuántos de ustedes hablan en español? Okay. Yeah, some of the words I'm afraid might come out half and half. or like our services in Uruguay, we call them reunions, or reuniones, reunions here. So if I say that here, you'd probably be... Yes, sir, good question.
Do you have opportunities to go work, say, for your neighbor or whatever, as they did for you?
Yes, sir, I've made opportunities to help him specifically and other neighbors as well. He had to re-roof his barn shortly after we roofed our house, and so I said, "Well, I'll come up there and help you." "Oh, no, I got it." And I said, "No, I'm coming up to help you." No, you got tons of stuff to do." And I was like, "I'm going to come help." And just showed up to help him, help him with some fence, help some other neighbors move some cows, and talk to some other neighbors possibly about training some horses for him. And so it's and they're kind of like, "Well, we're going to watch you train your horse first and see if you really know what you're talking about." I had a neighbor come over to doctor. He had asked him for some medicine because I needed to. I'm learning about the different sicknesses there in the animals. And so, you know, I had a steer get sick. And so called up the neighbor, "Hey, can you come to see what you think? What's wrong with him?" And he came over and brought some medicine with him and explaining different things. And so sometimes they're looking at me like, "Well, you're weird. You don't know about this stuff." You know, they have screw worms. How many years has that been eradicated from the U.S.? I remember my grandpa telling stories about screw worms, and they have screw worms down there. So when I have to go doctor the animal, or like a calf is born, I have to go doctor it within a couple of days of being born, or it's got a bad infection. So sometimes things like that I didn't grow up experiencing, I have to call a neighbor to come help or whatever. Do you really know what you're doing with these cows? But then other times, they'll come over and see us doing stuff, and they're like, "I guess you do know what you're doing." So, yes, sir. It's as we've been getting more and more established, there seems to be more and more open. The people, our neighbors, being more and more open, just to letting us help them, letting us come over and talk with them. They have a lot of time. If you want to come over and visit. So that's always a good thing, to show up at their house. Usually about midday or about 11 o'clock, the heat of the day, they take off for several hours for a siesta, and while the sun's at its hottest point. And so I'll go visit one of our neighbors, and they'll be drinking their tea. I drank it more when we first got there, and then it started bothering my stomach some, so I didn't drink it as much. And also, they drink, it's a gourd that's hollowed out, and it's a loose leaf green tea that they put in there, and then pour hot water on top of it and drink out of it's a straw that has like a spoon on the end, a covered spoon that's perforated, so it filters out the loose leaf tea, and you just drink the tea, not the leaves. And so typically what they do is they'll serve it, and then they'll drink you know, all the water out of the first serving, and they'll pour more hot water in there and give it to the next person. And however many people are there, they just pass it around. And, you know, our American culture is like, germ! and I tried to get over that. germs are very real, and I found that usually after I was with people and drinking, then the next day I'd come down sick. You know, I have a lot more germs I wasn't used to there that I had to get used to, and so my body, you know, I'd get sick. And so I kind of cut down a lot on drinking as much of the mate, the tea, with them as I did to begin with. But I still do with them just to not offend them. Just try not to drink it as often. But God, we have to. There comes a point of being able to keep doors open of communication, not offending someone, and trusting God at the same point. There's one time we went. We had a Bible study in a small town, and this man had been offended when somebody else had come to preach the gospel, and they hadn't shared. They brought their own mate with them, and they were offended. And we heard about this because they're like, "Well, they're too good to drink ours." And so we went there. Actually, this time we took the whole family. And after we'd had a Bible study and sang some songs, then they wanted to give us something to eat. They brought out some cake and some juice. And we'd watched it didn't dawn on us till afterward, but we watched the lady send one of our kids down this mud trail it was kind of built out in the middle of the pond where their pigs were wallowing in the mud and their geese were over on this side. And she sent out this mud trail kind of out to the center of this pond where he dipped up some water. And we realized afterward that water was for our Kool-Aid that they mixed up to serve us, and also to wash the dishes. And the next day, I had the worst stomach bug ever I had ever had. I was bad off for about 3 days. And finally got over that, and I thought, I am never doing that again. And the next month, they wanted us back. And there has to be, I turned it over to the Lord. I was like, Lord, I have to trust in you. If it's going to save these, if you're going to do work in these people's lives by me not offending them, and this in a small thing like drinking their water, I'm going to do it. And so it comes a point of trusting the Lord to take care of us as well. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
Does he teach against God as you talk about that?
Most of the witches say they're not teaching black magic or not in the black arts. They're serving a yellow band or a red band or even a white band. Like, you know, we don't have to have a meeting, you know, in a building with chairs. Why don't we just take it outside? And we'll all sit in a circle instead of sitting in rows, and you know, and we'll talk about God, and you know, why don't we just offer a sacrifice as well? Now, we're not serving black; we're on the good side. Most of them most of the witches would teach that, and then a lot of the pastors of the Pentecostal churches are sell you multiple things, brooms or feather dusters, so you can clean your house with those things. They've blessed those things in you know, brooms, so it'll chase out the demons that are in the spiders in your house, and they'll even go out to the ranches, and if you pay them so much, then they'll walk around your ranch. I believe on the video there was a picture of a dead chicken hanging up. That chicken had been there for 2 months, and you know, we think, well, it's just a show. Well, God has allowed Satan to have a certain amount of power. You think, how would a chicken hang there for 2 months in the summertime without rotting, without other animals coming to eat it, except that it had some sort of demonic influence over it. So these things are very real, nothing to joke around about. These pastors will go out and offer sacrifices. If somebody, you know, a rancher says, well, my sheep are sick, or my cattle are dying, and the Pentecostal pastor say, well, you pay me so much, and I'll cast the demons out of them. Well, they weren't sick or dying because demons. They were sick or dying because of lack of nutrition or some pest. If these pastors are preaching, going around, if you don't get better or the animals don't get better after they've cast out the demons, then it's not his fault that he didn't have enough power to do it. It's your fault for not having the faith. And so it's always for their advantage, of course. Yes, ma'am.
Have you had any?
Oh, we've talked to a number of them. Yes, ma'am.
And how did they react?
Oh, basically that we're teaching a skewed gospel, and that we're lacking faith to preach the with the liveliness and the emotion and the power of the Spirit. We need to pray for the fire of the Spirit to descend so we can have meetings. We lack that. Yes, sir.
So it seems like that the Lord puts us in our life to make us know we're really doing the right thing. And He is not making it easy.
Right.
It's not. And you would think a Pentecostal would want to support what we're trying to do, to bring the Lord to them.
Right. No.
He's done that to us before, but we will survive.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes, it's amazing, sometimes after just seem like going through battle after battle and trial after trial, and every now and then the Lord puts something in our path, just it's like confirmation. You're doing the right thing. Just keep going. You're doing the right thing. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. It's around 30, close to 30% Pentecostalism professing there. They're very organized as far as this, and they'll have a go into a town and have a main, two or three, depending on the size of the town, a main church or two or three main churches that they'll set up, send pastors in, and then start out in the different neighborhoods. Just small, like almost like house churches, or actually they'll build a building, but it'll be small church for about 50 people. So, there are Assemblies of God there, but that's totally separate from the Pentecostals. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, in the different neighborhoods, a lot of the houses where they set up for services, our people have offered or given those houses to in exchange for healing or blessing of some sort. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Update on your vehicle. You had some issues with your vehicle, and then electricity all the way up to the house.
It is. Yes. Yes, we back in May, when we were expecting our last child, then we were needing to get a bigger vehicle because our double cab, crew cab S10 pickup was getting too small, and we couldn't legally drive to Montevideo. We tried to get up there a couple times a year for paperwork and such, and to see Tanya's parents. It was getting too small for us, and so we had to trade it in and get a van. I regretted getting rid of the truck, but there wasn't any other way to do it, to be able to get a van. And just because I use the truck all the time. But anyway, we got a van, and then the motor went out on us about 2 months afterwards. And took it to a mechanic there in town, and he asked me, oh, well, we can do kind of a jimmy rig kind of fix. And I said, no, we're going to fix this thing. I want it to last. I got to carry my family around. We put on about 400 kilometers a week, back and forth to different ministries, and I need it to last. And he says, okay, well, we'll get this part and this part, and we need this, that's another. Okay, so he fixed it, and then in October, it went out again. And we were actually heading to Montevideo, and about just a half a mile out from a village that found out there was another pastor there. friend of a friend. So got to know this pastor. Just it was a fundamental work there in this other town. And he says, well, before I took on the pastorate, I was a mechanic for 15 years. So if you want, I'll take your van and fix it. So in his spare time, which took 3 months, then he totally rebuilt the motor on the van. And we got it back just the week before we left. So in the meantime, those 3 months, the first few weeks, we were hiking the mile and a half to the highway, you know, to catch the bus to get to church. And the summertime was getting quite difficult with about 95 degrees and 90% humidity. It was quite warm. A walk, and with five kids, it was kind of hard to get there and then bring anything back. Usually end up carrying a couple of the kids. So had a dirt bike that I'd had for a couple of years, just used for driving around on our place and also for going to town for Bible studies and stuff when I went by myself. And so I traded that in for a Volkswagen Gol. And so we'd all crammed in that for the next couple months. But it was a blessing. We got to church and could get some things back from town, and so it was a blessing. And so when we were going to leave, and I had asked, our neighbor had volunteered, I'd talked to him, and he had volunteered to watch out for the place for us while we were gone. And so I, you know, he said, well, we'll figure out how much you can pay me. And I said, well, you know, this car is worth about this much. I said, how about I give you the car in exchange for watching the cows? And he was just thrilled to pieces with that. So kind of following up on the question I never did finish answering over here, as far as how much, you know, getting ministering and working on the ranch. Our goal from the beginning has been to eventually be tent makers in the rural community there. And so how does that all pan out? Well, I try to spend a couple weeks working on the ranch, a couple days a week working on the ranch, and then the other 5 days in ministry, whether it's visiting neighbors or going to the auctions and witnessing, handing out tracts, or the Bible studies or church, and put a lot of miles on the vehicles that away. But right now, that's what we try to do. And I say we have 8 cows plus a milk cow, and that's been a big blessing. I figured out one day when we moved out there, we were spending about $800 a year just on milk. And so I thought, well, you can buy a milk cow for $600, and we have all the milk we need and can make butter and cheese. And so that's been a huge blessing as well. And we have chickens. And we're able to send extra butter and milk to several of the neighbors. We get to get it to them every now and then too. So that's also been another open door, just to show we're not there to get from them, but helping them out as well. So in the future, we are praying for more land that would actually be able to sustain us, and possibly even another family. Praying for more workers, because the laborers are few and the labor is ripe. And yes, ma'am. Yes. They don't drink much coffee. I like coffee, and it's kind of hard to find coffee that's decent. But their economy, a lot of the smaller ranches, we'll just talk mid to small ranches, they produce, you know, all the meat comes from mostly from sheep. And a lot of them do have a milk cow. A couple of our neighbors don't, so that's why we send them milk every now and then. Or they'll just, if they don't have a milk cow, they'll just get up a cow that's gentler. When she has a calf, they'll bring her up and put her in a pen at night, take the calf off her, and then milk her the next morning and let her out. You know, a couple days a week, or when they feel like they want some milk. So so they live off pretty much off their smaller acreage. It would be, I'm trying to think what, thinking in, they measure, instead of acres, they measure in hectares. So most of the, a lot of the self-sustained places where they live off the place is around 500 to 600 acres. And so, yeah. And there's a lot of, as far as, there's some export of rice farther to the east of us. There's rice fields, and there's export of rice. There's export of wool. There's export of beef. And some there's some export of lamb as well.
Can they grow anything there? Any fruits and vegetables? Rice is everything grown?
It's lots of stuff grows there. a lot of the ranchers, smaller ranchers, have their own gardens and fruit trees. And we bought the place. There was 20 orange trees and 3 tangerine trees on it, and lemon trees, apple trees, pear trees, peach trees, pineapple, banana. Few banana. It's plenty warm. Yeah, there's two growing season for vegetables. As our winter time is in, our hardest months of winter are usually in June and July, and so a lot of people start planting in August, and then once it gets too hot around the end of November, then kind of let off, and then plant again in February. So. Uruguay is on the coast. We're about an hour from the coast where we are.
What about fishing industry and such?
There is a little bit of that there along the coast. Yeah, just a little bit. Okay, well, sure. Thank you all for your attention and for your good questions, and pray that gives you a better feel for the ministry there. And thank you so much for your prayers. And if you have any other questions, feel free to ask us afterwards. Pastor.